From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's executive order that was meant to extend a federal eviction moratorium due to the COVID-19 pandemic actually does very little. While Trump claimed it would, quote, solve that problem largely, hopefully completely, others have said it will do nothing to help the tens of millions of Americans that are on the precipice of homelessness. Unemployment is widespread, and with relief payments expiring and rent payments due, the U.S. appears to be on the brink of a massive housing crisis that is unprecedented in the modern era. My guest is Zach Newman, founder of the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project. He's a lawyer whose practice focuses on landlord-tenant debt collection and wage dispute cases. He's also a public policy lecturer at Colorado University Denver's School of Public Affairs, and he writes about jobs and economic issues at the Aspen Institute. Welcome to the program, Zach.
Thanks, Sonali. It's great to be on today.
So what is the reason that we might be facing this crisis now and not, say, in April or May or June?
Yeah, well, I think we're at a really interesting and challenging intersection of the COVID-19 moment. Obviously, right after COVID was discovered, or it kind of arrived in the United States, Congress passed the CARES Act, which provided fairly rigorous financial support for families and individuals who were displaced from employment by the disease. At the same time, state governments and the federal government put various eviction moratoria in place, protecting tenants from being removed from their homes. So you had multiple forms of protections for renters in the United States. One form was that landlords could not evict them, but then they were also receiving money, which presumably allowed them to pay their bills. Now we're in a moment where all of that has changed. The federal moratorium is no longer in place. That expired a few weeks ago. Most states in the United States have also discontinued their various moratoria. And then the CARES Act funding, which included stimulus checks at the beginning, and then for people who lost their jobs, federally enhanced UI, unemployment insurance, has also been discontinued. So tenants across the U.S. who have lost their work due to COVID-19 aren't receiving any additional funds from the government. They, for the most part, are not protected by eviction moratoria. And so now they're in a situation where there's no more money coming in. They've not gone back to work, and eviction courts are open for business.
The relief that was made available to renters initially, I understand, was never actually rent forgiveness, right? It was just, okay, we'll allow you to defer paying your rent. And are there large numbers of Americans that have very big bills of back payments for rent that they are faced with now?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So none of the state or the federal moratoria allowed tenants to not pay their rent. It didn't defer bills at all. The rent was still due. It just meant that if you were unable to pay your rent, you couldn't be evicted. But now you have tenants all across the United States who not only are no longer enjoying those protections, but in many cases have significant rental debt or rental arrears that they owe their landlord. And now being unable to pay, it means that their landlords are likely to begin eviction proceedings in those cases. Which is scary for those tenants. I mean, these are folks, again, who've not had a chance to go back to work. Government benefits have been discontinued. And so I think you have a lot of renters around the country asking the question, what do I do next?
So the executive order that Trump signed on eviction relief, supposedly, over the weekend, what exactly does it do? As I mentioned, Trump claims that it may solve the problem entirely. Others have said it's going to do absolutely nothing. If you read the executive order, it instructs the secretaries of Health and Human Services and Housing and Urban Development to go, you know, as far as they can to provide assistance, but it doesn't actually, as far as I can tell, extend the federal eviction moratorium.
No, it doesn't. And I would say it's actually worse than nothing, because what we're hearing from our clients now is, I'm okay. There's a new eviction moratorium in place. The president implemented it last week. Everything is great. So I can go on living where I'm living. And we're now in the really uncomfortable position of having to tell our clients, no, actually, this is not an eviction moratorium. It doesn't provide any additional protections. And you really do have to address the situation right now because you are facing eviction. And so if anything, it's muddied the waters rather than done anything to protect tenants.
When we talk about the kinds of relief that is actually needed right now, what are you recommending needs to happen? Because of course there are landlords that have to pay their mortgages. There are unemployed Americans that need housing but have no money coming in, mostly for no fault of their own because we're in a pandemic. Some have suggested an eviction moratorium. Others have said rent forgiveness. There's a whole variety of options out there, some of which are more effective and others are less effective. What do you recommend needs to happen?
Yeah, it's a really frightening moment for millions of Americans. I think fundamentally we need to do two things, one at the federal level and one at the state level. At the state level, we need our state governments to buy people time. They need to re-implement state eviction moratoria across the U.S. And ensure that people cannot be evicted during the pandemic. And then at the same time, Congress needs to get its act together and begin work on finally passing a second wave of the CARES Act or the previously considered HEROES Act and include in that $100 billion plus in rental relief for tenants so that they can pay their landlords. And, you know, this helps tenants, it keeps them housed, but it also helps landlords. A lot of mom and pop landlords in the U.S. now are facing multi-month rental arrears. They themselves can't pay their mortgages. They can't pay to maintain the properties. And so if Congress takes action and puts real money in the hands of tenants, it means that the entire housing sector in the U.S. is stabilized. And so that's the second piece of it, and arguably the most important piece in that it stabilizes everyone in the equation.
What do you know about the numbers of people that are facing eviction over the next month or two? And is there, I imagine, geographic disparity, some states where you'll see a much worse situation than others?
So the numbers are staggering. They're almost unbelievable. We created through the Aspen Institute an economic model that looks at this, and it uses U.S. Census Bureau Pulse Survey data. And the U.S. Census Bureau Pulse Survey asked renters two questions. One, were you able to pay your rent last month fully and on time? And then two, how confident are you next month that you'll be able to make that same payment? And each month through the COVID crisis, that number has gone up. And now what we're looking at is somewhere in the range of 30 to 40 million Americans who may not be able to fully pay their rent on time. So it's an incredibly large number. Even scarier is that this number is more pronounced in certain parts of the country where COVID-19 has returned more aggressively, where you don't traditionally have a history of strong tenant protections. So folks are facing eviction more rapidly than they would in other states. And then, of course, also the data suggests that if you are Black or Latinx, your odds of facing eviction or certainly having concerns about being able to pay your rent are nearly double those of white Americans.
There are states that already experienced housing crises. I'm in California, which for years has had this crisis building up about the cost of housing just becoming more and more out of reach for ordinary Californians. Similar situations in other states have arisen as well. So I imagine that what we're facing now is only exacerbating, pouring fuel on a fire that was raging.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, rental costs in the U.S. have been out of step with income for decades. And now you're putting people in a position where they don't even have income and rental prices are still very high. So, you know, borrowing from family members, taking high interest loans from payday lenders or credit cards, even those very unattractive options don't necessarily allow tenants to pay their rent. So it is very quickly becoming a crisis moment for millions of Americans.
I mean, what will happen to them? Do you expect homelessness is essentially going to explode because short of shelters taking people in, which are already overwhelmed and are temporary, there are no other options, are there? Or I imagine there's also massive displacement that's going to rise. People are going to try to move to places where they might be able to afford rent.
Yeah, you know, it's not clear what will happen. I think in some of these cases, you will have landlords say, I'm going to forgive or dramatically reduce your rent to keep you on the property because I don't think I can get another tenant. I think in some cases, you'll have people who've seen wage reductions, but not total wage loss, move out of their home or apartment and into a more affordable home or apartment. I think some people will move in with family members, others will move to hotels, and then others will be made homeless by the moment. And whether that's short-term or long-term, that displacement will be very real. So I think, you know, we'll see how this situation plays out over the next 3 or 4 months. But generally in these moments, you would expect to see tenants searching out a variety of different options when they're displaced from the rental unit that they're living in.
It's just remarkable to read President Trump's executive order on housing. A lot of words that actually amounts to almost nothing. Essentially, what he says is it is the policy of the United States to minimize to the greatest extent possible residential evictions and foreclosures. And it involves the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the director of the CDC. They should consider whether there are any measures temporarily halting residential evictions of any tenants for failure to pay rent are reasonably necessary. The Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development should identify any and available federal funds to provide temporary financial assistance to renters and homeowners. So just basically look for money lying about, not actually have any funding made available that's concrete. And then taking action as appropriate and consistent with applicable law to promote the ability of renters and homeowners to avoid eviction or foreclosures resulting from financial hardships caused by COVID-19. I don't even know what that means, to promote the ability of renters to avoid eviction. I mean, you're a lawyer. What does that mean to you?
I mean, this is the whole problem with the executive order. The sentiment is actually a good one. We want to keep people in their homes. We want to avoid evictions. But this doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't change the playing field. It doesn't necessarily put funds in the pockets of tenants so they can pay their landlord's rent. It doesn't stop evictions in any meaningful way. So, you know, maybe as a sentiment, it's a positive one. But in terms of actually providing relief for people who may soon be homeless, it does virtually nothing.
What is the advice that you're giving to people facing eviction? Because of course, there are different laws depending upon and policies depending upon cities, depending upon states. There's such a patchwork of rights that tenants have, right?
Yeah, this really varies by the city and the state you live in. And you know, the divergences between, say, where we live in Colorado and folks who live in California or Washington are fairly dramatic. I think the one piece of advice that is true for every part of the country is if you are facing eviction, the number one thing you can do is speak to an attorney. In your city or state, there is likely a legal aid or a legal services office. Reaching out to that office early in the process, even as early as when you discover you're not going to be able to make your full rental payment, really, really, really makes a difference. It means that you're likely to get the best advice. You can understand better how to negotiate with your landlord. And generally speaking, tenants who have access to counsel have better outcomes. It doesn't necessarily mean you won't have to leave your home or apartment and move elsewhere, but you may be able to reduce the amount of debt you owe, or you may be able to buy yourself more time, or in many cases, you may actually be able to stay. So reaching out to a lawyer is the number one thing you can do, and it's something you want to do right away, as soon as you find you have issues with payment.
And of course, if you can't afford to pay rent, you can't afford to hire a lawyer. So I think, as you were saying, legal aid organizations that provide pro bono counseling and any other resources that are free. Now, of course, the housing crisis, this crisis of that we're on the brink of seeing, you know, tens of millions of Americans potentially becoming evicted is intricately linked to unemployment. There are millions of Americans that have no jobs to go back to or cannot go back to jobs because of the pandemic, and they might have vulnerable health issues, and they might have lost their health insurance, and they have no money coming in because Congress has basically deadlocked. It's critically important to just get money into people's hands, right, so that they can not just address all of their needs, but also remain in their homes. I mean, just getting money into the pockets of Americans during a crisis like this seems to be a critically important issue, one that certainly the Republicans don't get. And even Trump, who has approved federal unemployment benefits being extended has only approved them at the level of $300 a week, half of what was being offered before.
Yeah, well, I think, again, putting money in the pockets of people who've lost wages or lost their employment entirely goes a long way in resolving this crisis. Obviously, for certain communities, those funds are not accessible, but for the vast majority of Americans, they are. And providing that money also means, again, that the whole housing sector is stabilized. If you provide more stimulus, if you provide full federally enhanced UI as provided under the First CARES Act, so that's $600 a week, or even if you provide rent relief, those funds let tenants pay their landlords, which means landlords can pay their mortgages, they can maintain properties. Mom and pop landlords who rely on properties for retirement income can access those funds. So really, this is not just about stabilizing tenants, although for us, that's clearly the most important part of the equation. It's about stabilizing the whole sector and ensuring that everyone can walk away from the COVID-19 moment whole.
What are housing, investors, those moneyed interests that have holdings that depend on rent, so not the mom and pop renters, but the big renters, what are they demanding from the government? I imagine that they might be lobbying the government for some sort of economic relief.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a number of industry groups in DC that work on behalf of large property owners. And almost uniformly, they also have been signaling that this is a crisis. So the National Apartment Association, as early as April, put out a letter to Congress saying that during the course of the COVID crisis, upwards of 25% of renters might need financial or economic support to stay housed. And then they've kind of doubled down on that request in support of things like rent relief, increased federally enhanced UI, and other provisions that allow tenants to pay their rent. One would assume, because it's good for the industry and it assures that the properties their members own and manage are able to stay solvent.
If there is a massive amount of rent non-payment, are we going to see housing costs going down and rents going down?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I think it depends on the market. Where I live in Denver and more broadly in the state of Colorado, rental prices have started to decline. So you're starting to see cheaper rents. You're starting to also see multi-month kind of upfront free rent packages, things like that to entice tenants. So efforts are being made by landlords to bring in new tenants by lowering prices. Now, whether this is a short-term phenomenon or it speaks to a longer-term trend, anyone's to say, but it has been something we've seen here in Colorado. Not sure what's happening in the rest of the country, although falling rent prices and properties across the country would not surprise me, given the scope of the crisis.
Aren't states also deeply limited in what they can do at this moment? Generally speaking, states have provided the kind of assistance that people who struggle with housing need. But because of the pandemic, the same reason that people are facing eviction or, you know, the inability to put food on the table, states are also completely devastated financially. State budgets have been deeply slashed. Revenues have dropped as the tax base has dropped. And so there's less money at the state level to provide relief, right, for those people who are experiencing homelessness or might be on the verge of experiencing homelessness?
That's exactly right, yeah. So state budgets, for the most part, and there are some states that are outliers that may actually be able to make a significant dent in the problem, but most states, even under normal conditions, wouldn't have the bandwidth budget-wise to address the problem. And that's even more pronounced during this COVID-19 moment where state budgets, which in many cases are supported by property taxes, are just not keeping up with the scale of the crisis. To give an example, here in Colorado, where I live, the state recently passed and implemented a $20 million rent relief fund. And we're certainly appreciative of that. The people who've accessed this money have benefited. It has kept them in their homes. And so, again, thankful for that money. But long-term modeling suggests that rental arrears in Colorado could reach $1 billion through the end of the COVID-19 crisis. And so, obviously, $20 million is about 2% of what may be needed. And so this is why we need the federal government to step in, because they've got the checkbook and the budget to actually make a significant dent in this problem and keep tenants housed.
Right. I mean, the federal government's intervention at a time of crisis that, you know, most Americans were not expecting is what's needed the most. But we have a executive branch that is the perhaps the most loath to have any kind of federal government intervention in the modern era. I mean, there's been this ideology pervading, especially conservative thinking in this country, that any kind of government intervention is bad. But when you have a crisis like this, there is government intervention to help corporations, to help stabilize industries at the top, but not as much at the bottom. And it's quite shocking to me to see that even, you know, those people who realize that putting money in the pockets of Americans will help corporations ultimately, because people have to spend the money, are ideologically bound or binding themselves away from that and loath to suggest that the government needs to intervene. It almost seems like this fundamentalism, you know, this fundamentalist thinking. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but it just, it seems less practical and more ideological.
Yeah, well, it's a strange moment. You know, the first round of CARES Act funding for us was really surprising. It went further than we thought it would in terms of, you know, paying people's bills, ensuring they had very extensive access to unemployment insurance. Certainly for a lot of our clients, the stimulus check really helped. I think the issue now is that as negotiations proceed and, you know, Washington takes time to reach agreement, the first of the month, at the risk of sounding really simple, comes every 30 days. And so you already have tenants who on August 1st had issues paying. Maybe they pulled it together, maybe they didn't. But as negotiations proceed, we get closer and closer to September 1st. And the fear that we have as tenant advocates and as lawyers is that even if Congress passes something before September 1st, it's not clear that implementation will happen before this date. And so you could see a world where a package gets done, something is passed before the 1st, but that money doesn't make it out to unemployed tenants until well after the 1st. And because eviction moratoria are not in place in most states in the U.S. now, eviction proceedings begin. So the money is on the way, but while the money is on the way and being sent, tenants are in court, they're filing documents, they're receiving writs of restitutions, and they're getting evicted despite the fact that Congress finally got its act together and provided some funding.
Well, we are going to see what happens in the next few weeks or month. Give out a website where people can find out about the work you do, Zach.
Yeah, so we're the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project. Our website is cedproject.org. I will say for everyone watching and listening, we only provide legal services in the state of Colorado, given bar rules and things of that nature. But our policy recommendations and our economic modeling, which I've alluded to, are national, and they go state by state, and those are included on our website.
Zach, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me on. Really a pleasure to be here and to get to chat with you today.
My guest has been Zach Newman, founder of the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project based in Colorado. He's a lawyer whose practice focuses on landlord-tenant debt collection and wage dispute cases. He's also a public policy lecturer at Colorado University Denver's School of Public Affairs. He writes about jobs and economic issues at the Aspen Institute. We've been discussing the massive eviction crisis that millions of Americans are on the verge of. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.